Neuromancer by William Gibson, continued. Cassette 3, side 1. One dart, shitface, you won't feel it for months. Please, you call this in English making me very tight. I call it a bad morning. Now tell us about your man and get your ass out of here. She put the gun away. He is living in Fener at Kuchuk Gulhane Jadesi 14. I have his tunnel route, nightly to the bazaar. He performs most recently at the Yenishahir Palace Oteli, a modern place in the style touristic. But it has been arranged that the police have shown a certain interest in these shows. The Yenishahir management has grown nervous. He smiled. He smelled of some metallic aftershave. I want to know about the implants, she said, massaging her thigh. I want to know exactly what he can do. Terzi Bastian nodded. Worst is how you say in English, the subliminals. He made the word 4 careful syllables. On our left, said the Mercedes as it steered through a maze of rainy streets, is Kapali Karsi, the Grand Bazaar. Beside Case, the Finn made an appreciative noise, but he was looking in the wrong direction. The right side of the street was lined with miniature scrap yards. Case saw a gutted locomotive atop rust-stained, broken lengths of fluted marble. Headless marble statues were stacked like firewood. Homesick? Case asked. Place sucks, the Finn said. His black silk tie was starting to resemble a worn carbon ribbon. There were medallions of kebab gravy and fried egg on the lapels of his new suit. Hey, Jersey, Case said to the Armenian who sat behind them. Where'd this guy get his stuff installed? In Chiba City. He has no left lung. The other is boosted, is how you say it? Anyone might buy these implants, but this one is most talented. The Mercedes swerved, avoiding a balloon-tired dray stacked with hides. I have followed him in the street and seen a dozen cycles fall near him in a day. Find the cyclist in a hospital. The story is always the same. A scorpion poised beside a brake lever. What you see is what you get, yeah, the Finn said. I seen the schematics on the guy's silicon. Very flash. What he imagines, you see. I figure he could narrow it to a pulse and fry a retina over easy. You have told these to your woman friend? Terzi Bastian leaned forward between the ultra-suede buckets. In Turkey, women are still women. This one... The Finn snorted. She'd have you wearing your balls for a bow tie if you looked at her cross-eyed. I do not understand this idiom. That's okay, Case said. Means shut up. The Armenian sat back, leaving a metallic edge of aftershave. He began to whisper to a Sanyo transceiver in a strange salad of Greek, French, Turkish, isolated fragments of English. The transceiver answered in French. The Mercedes swung smoothly around a corner. The Spice Bazaar, sometimes called the Egyptian Bazaar, the car said, was erected on the site of an earlier bazaar erected by Sultan Hatice in 1660. This is the city's central market for spices, software, perfumes, drugs. Drugs, Case said, watching the car's wipers cross and recross the bulletproof Lexan. What's that you said before, Jersey, about this Riviera being wired? A mixture of cocaine and meperidine, yes. The Armenian went back to the conversation he was having with the Sanyo. Demerol, they used to call that, said the Finn. He's a speedball artist. Funny class of people you're mixing with, Case. Never mind, Case said, turning up the collar of his jacket. We'll get the poor fucker a new pancreas or something. Once they entered the bazaar, the Finn brightened noticeably, as though he were comforted by the crowd density and the sense of enclosure. They walked with the Armenian along a broad concourse, beneath soot-stained sheets of plastic and green-painted ironwork out of the age of steam. A 1,000 suspended ads writhed and flickered. Hey, Christ, the Finn said, taking Case's arm. Look at that. He pointed. It's a horse, man. You ever see a horse? Case glanced at the embalmed animal and shook his head. It was displayed on a sort of pedestal near the entrance to a place that sold birds and monkeys. The thing's legs had been worn black and hairless by decades of passing hands. Saw one in Maryland once, the Finn said, and that was a good 3 years after the pandemic. There's Arabs still trying to code them up from the DNA, but they always croak. The animal's brown glass eyes seemed to follow them as they passed. Terzi Bastian led them into a cafe near the core of the market, a low-ceilinged room that looked as though it had been in continuous operation for centuries. Skinny boys in soiled white coats dodged between the crowded tables, balancing steel trays with bottles of Turk Tuborg and tiny glasses of tea. Case bought a pack of Yeheyuans from a vendor by the door. The Armenian was muttering to his sanyo. "Come," he said. "He is moving. Each night he rides the tunnel to the bazaar to purchase his mixture from Ali. Your woman is close. Come." The alley was an old place, too old, the walls cut from blocks of dark stone. The pavement was uneven and smelled of a century's dripping gasoline absorbed by ancient limestone. "Can't see shit," he whispered to the Finn. "That's okay for sweetmeat," the Finn said. "Quiet," said Terzi Bastian, too loudly. Wood grated on stone or concrete. 10 meters down the alley, a wedge of yellow light fell across wet cobbles, widened. A figure stepped out and the door grated shut again, leaving the narrow place in darkness. Case shivered. "Now," Terzi Bastian said, and a brilliant beam of white light, directed from the rooftop of the building opposite the market, pinned the slender figure beside the ancient wooden door in a perfect circle. Bright eyes darted left, right, and the man crumpled. Case thought someone had shot him. He lay face down, blonde hair pale against the old stone, his limp hands white and pathetic. The floodlight never wavered. The back of the fallen man's jacket heaved and burst, blood splashing the wall and doorway. A pair of impossibly long, rope-tendoned arms flexed grayish-pink in the glare. The thing seemed to pull itself up out of the pavement through the inert, bloody ruin that had been Riviera. It was 2 meters tall, stood on 2 legs, and seemed to be headless. Then it swung slowly to face them, and Case saw that it had a head but no neck. It was eyeless, the skin gleaming a wet intestinal pink. The mouth, if it was a mouth, was circular, conical, shallow, and lined with a seething growth of hairs or bristles, glittering like black chrome. It kicked the rags of clothing and flesh aside and took a step, the mouth seeming to scan for them as it moved. Terzi Bastian said something in Greek or Turkish and rushed the thing, his arms spread like a man attempting to dive through a window. He went through it, into the muzzle flash of a pistol from the dark beyond the circle of light. Fragments of rock whizzed past Case's head. The Finn jerked him down into a crouch. The light from the rooftop vanished, leaving him with mismatched afterimages of muzzle flash, monster, and white beam. His ears rang. Then the light returned, bobbing now, searching the shadows. Terzi Bastian was leaning against a steel door, his face very white in the glare. He held his left wrist and watched blood drip from a wound in his left hand. The blonde man, whole again, unbloodied, lay at his feet. Molly stepped out of the shadows, all in black, with her Fletcher in her hand. "Use the radio," the Armenian said through gritted teeth. "Call in Mahmut. We must get him out of here. This is not a good place." "Little prick nearly made it," the Finn said, his knees cracking loudly as he stood up, brushing ineffectually at the legs of his trousers. "You were watching the horror show, right? Not the hamburger that got tossed out of sight. Real cute. Well, help him get his ass out of here. I gotta scan all that gear before he wakes up. Make sure Armitage is getting his money's worth." Molly bent and picked something up. A pistol. "A Nambu," she said. "Nice gun." Terzi Bastian made a whining sound. Case saw that most of his middle finger was missing. With the city drenched in pre-dawn blue, she told the Mercedes to take them to Topkapi. The Finn and an enormous Turk named Mahmut had taken Riviera, still unconscious, from the alley. Minutes later, a dusty Citroën had arrived for the Armenian, who seemed on the verge of fainting. "You're an asshole," Molly told the man, opening the car door for him. "You should have hung back. I had him in my sights as soon as he stepped out." Terzi Bastian glared at her. So we're through with you anyway. She shoved him in and slammed the door. Run into you again and I'll kill you, she said to the white face behind the tinted window. The Citroën ground away down the alley and swung clumsily into the street. Now the Mercedes whispered through Istanbul as the city woke. They passed the Beyoğlu Tunnel terminal and sped past mazes of deserted back streets, run-down apartment houses that reminded Case vaguely of Paris. What is this thing? He asked Molly as the Mercedes parked itself on the fringes of the gardens that surround the Seraglio. He stared dully at the Baroque conglomeration of styles that was Topkapi. It was sort of a private whorehouse for the king, she said, getting out, stretching. Kept a lot of women there. Now it's a museum. Kind of like Finn's shop. All this stuff just jumbled in there. Big diamonds, swords, the left hand of John the Baptist. Like in a support vat? Nah, dead. Got it inside this brass hand thing. Little hatch on the side so the Christians could kiss it for luck. Got it off the Christians about 1,000,000 years ago, and they never dust the goddamn thing, 'cause it's an infidel relic. Black iron deer rusted in the gardens of the Seraglio. Case walked beside her, watching the toes of her boots crunch unkept grass made stiff by an early frost. They walked beside a path of cold octagonal flagstones. Winter was waiting somewhere in the Balkans. That Terzi, he's a grade-A scum, she said. He's the secret police, torturer. Real easy to buy out, too, with the kind of money Armitage was offering. In the wet trees around them, birds began to sing. I did that job for you, Case said. The one in London? I got something, but I don't know what it means. He told her the Corto story. Well, I knew there wasn't anybody name of Armitage in that screaming fist. Looked it up. She stroked the rusted flank of an iron doe. You figure the little computer pulled him out of it? In that French hospital? I figure Wintermute, Case said. She nodded. Thing is, he said, do you think he knows he was Corto before? I mean, he wasn't anybody in particular by the time he hit the ward, so maybe Wintermute just... Yeah, built him up from go. Yeah. She turned and they walked on. It figures. You know, the guy doesn't have any life going, in private, not as far as I can tell. You see a guy like that, you figure there's something he does when he's alone, but not Armitage. Sits and stares at the wall, man. Then something clicks and he goes into high gear and wheels for Wintermute. So why's he got that stash in London? Nostalgia? Maybe he doesn't know about it, she said. Maybe it's just in his name, right? I don't get it, Case said. Just thinking out loud. How smart's an AI, Case? Depends. Some aren't much smarter than dogs. Pets. Cost a fortune, anyway. The real smart ones are as smart as the touring heat is willing to let them get. Look, you're a cowboy. How come you aren't just flat-out fascinated with those things? Well, he said, for starts, they're rare. Most of them are military, the bright ones, and we can't crack the ice. That's where ice all comes from, you know. And then there's the touring cops, and that's bad heat. He looked at her. I don't know. It just isn't part of the trip. Jockeys all the same, she said. No imagination. They came to a broad rectangular pond where carp nuzzled the stems of some white aquatic flower. She kicked a loose pebble in and watched the ripples spread. That's Wintermute, she said. This deal's real big, looks to me. We're out where the little waves are too broad. We can't see the rock that hit the center. We know something's there, but not why. I want to know why. I want you to go and talk to Wintermute. I couldn't get near it, he said. You're dreaming. Try. Can't be done. Ask the flatline. What do we want out of that Riviera? He asked, hoping to change the subject. She spat into the pond. God knows. I'd as soon kill him as look at him. I saw his profile. He's a kind of compulsive Judas. Can't get off sexually unless he knows he's betraying the object of desire. That's what the file says. And they have to love him first. Maybe he loves them, too. That's why it was easy for Terzi to set him up for us, because he's been here 3 years, shopping politicals to the secret police. Probably Terzi let him watch when the cattle prods came out. He's done 18 in 3 years. All women aged 20 to 25. It kept Terzi in dissidence. She thrust her hands into her jacket pockets, because if he found one he really wanted, he'd make sure she turned political. He's got a personality like a modern's suit. The profile said it was a very rare type, estimated 1 in 2 million, which anyway says something good about human nature, I guess. She stared at the white flowers and the sluggish fish, her face sour. I think I'm going to have to buy myself some special insurance on that Peter. Then she turned and smiled, and it was very cold. What's that mean? Never mind. Let's go back to Bayaglu and find something like breakfast. I got a busy night again tonight. Gotta collect his stuff from that apartment in Fenner. Gotta go back to the bazaar and buy him some drugs. Buy him some drugs? How's he rate? She laughed. He's not dying on the wire, sweetheart, and it looks like he can't work without that special taste. I like you better now anyway. You aren't so goddamn skinny. She smiled. So I'll go to Ali, the dealer, and stock up. You betcha. Armitage was waiting in their room at the Hilton. Time to pack, he said, and Case tried to find the man called Corto behind the pale blue eyes and the tanned mask. He thought of Wage back in Chiba. Operators above a certain level tended to submerge their personalities, he knew. But Wage had had vices, lovers, even, it had been rumored, children. The blankness he found in Armitage was something else. Where to now? He asked, walking past the man to stare down into the street. What kind of climate? They don't have climate, just weather, Armitage said. Here, read the brochure. He put something on the coffee table and stood. Did Riviera check out okay? Where's the Finn? Riviera's fine. The Finn is on his way home. Armitage smiled, a smile that meant as much as the twitch of some insect's antenna. His gold bracelet clinked as he reached out to prod Case in the chest. Don't get too smart. Those little sacks are starting to show wear, but you don't know how much. Case kept his face very still and forced himself to nod. When Armitage was gone, he picked up one of the brochures. It was expensively printed in French, English, and Turkish. Freeside. Why wait? The four of them were booked on a THY flight out of Yeşilköy Airport. Transfer at Paris to the JAL shuttle. Case sat in the lobby of the Istanbul Hilton and watched Riviera browse bogus Byzantine fragments in the glass-walled gift shop. Armitage, his trench coat draped over his shoulders like a cape, stood in the shop's entrance. Riviera was slender, blonde, soft-voiced, his English accentless and fluid. Molly said he was 30, but it would have been difficult to guess his age. She added he was legally stateless and traveled under a forged Dutch passport. He was a product of the rubble rings that fringe the radioactive core of Old Bonn. Three smiling Japanese tourists bustled into the shop, nodding politely to Armitage. Armitage crossed the floor of the shop too quickly, too obviously, to stand beside Riviera. Riviera turned and smiled. He was very beautiful. Case assumed the features were the work of a Chiba surgeon. A subtle job. Nothing like Armitage's blandly handsome blend of pop faces. The man's forehead was high and smooth, gray eyes calm and distant. His nose, which might have been too nicely sculpted, seemed to have been broken and clumsily reset. The suggestion of brutality offset the delicacy of his jaw and the quickness of his smile. His teeth were small, even, and very white. Case watched the white hands play over the imitation fragments of sculpture. Riviera didn't act like a man who'd been attacked the night before, drugged with a toxin flechette, abducted, subjected to the Finn's examination, and pressured by Armitage into joining their team. Case checked his watch. Molly was due back from her drug run. He looked up at Riviera again. I bet you're stoned right now, asshole, he said to the Hilton lobby. A graying Italian matron in a white leather tuxedo jacket lowered her Porsche glasses to stare at him. He smiled broadly, stood, and shouldered his bag. He needed cigarettes for the flight. He wondered if there was a smoking section on the JAL shuttle. See you, lady, he said to the woman, who promptly slid the sunglasses back up her nose and turned away. There were cigarettes in the gift shop, but he didn't relish talking with Armitage or Riviera. He left the lobby and located a vending console in a narrow alcove at the end of a rank of payphones. He fumbled through a pocketful of lirasi, slotting the small, dull, alloy coins one after another, vaguely amused by the anachronism of the process. The phone nearest him rang. Automatically, he picked it up. "Yeah?" Faint harmonics, tiny, inaudible voices rattling across some orbital link, and then a sound like wind. "Hello, Case." A 50 lirasi coin fell from his hand, bounced, and rolled out of sight across Hilton carpeting. "Wintermute, Case. It's time we talk." It was a chip voice. "Don't you want to talk, Case?" He hung up. On his way back to the lobby, his cigarettes forgotten, he had to walk the length of the ranked phones. Each rang in turn, but only once as he passed. Part 3. Midnight in the Rue Jules Verne. Chapter 8. Archipelago. The islands. Taurus, Spindle, Cluster. Human DNA spreading out from gravity's steep well like an oil slick. Call up a graphics display that grossly simplifies the exchange of data in the L5 archipelago. One segment clicks in as red solid, a massive rectangle dominating your screen. Freeside. Freeside is many things, not all of them evident to the tourists who shuttle up and down the well. Freeside is brothel and banking nexus, pleasure dome and free port, border town and spa. Freeside is Las Vegas and the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, an orbital Geneva, and home to a family inbred and most carefully refined, the industrial clan of Tessier and Ashpool. On the THY liner to Paris, they sat together in first class, Molly in the window seat, Case beside her, Riviera and Armitage on the aisle. Once, as the plane banked over water, Case saw the jewel glow of a Greek island town. And once, reaching for his drink, he caught the flicker of a thing like a giant human sperm in the depths of his bourbon and water. Molly leaned across him and slapped Riviera's face once. "No, baby. No games. You play that subliminal shit around me, I'll hurt you real bad. I can do it without damaging you at all. I like that." Case turned automatically to check Armitage's reaction. The smooth face was calm, the blue eyes alert, but there was no anger. "That's right, Peter. Don't." Case turned back, in time to catch the briefest flash of a black rose, its petals sheened like leather, the black stem thorned with bright chrome. Peter Riviera smiled sweetly, closed his eyes, and fell instantly asleep. Molly turned away, her lenses reflected in the dark window. "You've been up, haven't you?" Molly asked as he squirmed his way back into the deep temperfoam couch on the JAL shuttle. "Nah, never travel much, just for biz." The steward was attaching readout trodes to his wrist and left ear. "Hope you don't get SAS," she said. "Airsick? No way." "It's not the same. Your heartbeat'll speed up in zero-G, and your inner ear'll go nuts for a while. Kicks in your flight reflex, like you'll be getting signals to run like hell, and a lot of adrenaline." The steward moved on to Riviera, taking a new set of trodes from his red plastic apron. Case turned his head and tried to make out the outline of the old Orly terminals, but the shuttle pad was screened by graceful blast deflectors of wet concrete. The one nearest the window bore an Arabic slogan in red spray bomb. He closed his eyes and told himself the shuttle was only a big airplane, one that flew very high. It smelled like an airplane, like new clothes and chewing gum and exhaustion. He listened to the piped Koto music and waited. 20 minutes, then gravity came down on him like a great, soft hand with bones of ancient stone. Space adaptation syndrome was worse than Molly's description, but it passed quickly enough, and he was able to sleep. The steward woke him as they were preparing to dock at JAL's terminal cluster. "We transfer to Freeside now?" he asked, eyeing a shred of Yehayuan tobacco that had drifted gracefully up out of his shirt pocket, to dance 10 centimeters from his nose. There was no smoking on shuttle flights. No, we got the boss's usual little kink in the plans, you know? We're getting this taxi out to Zion Cluster. She touched the release plate on her harness and began to free herself from the embrace of the foam. Funny choice of venue, you ask me. How's that? Dreads, Rastas. Colony's about 30 years old now. What's that mean? You'll see. It's an okay place by me. Anyway, they'll let you smoke your cigarettes there. Zion had been founded by 5 workers who'd refused to return, who'd turned their backs on the well and started building. They'd suffered calcium loss and heart shrinkage before rotational gravity was established in the colony's central torus. Seen from the bubble of the taxi, Zion's makeshift hull reminded Case of the patchwork tenements of Istanbul, the irregular discolored plates laser-scrawled with Rastafarian symbols and the initials of welders. Molly and a skinny Zionite called Erdal helped Case negotiate a free-fall corridor into the core of a smaller torus. He'd lost track of Armitage and Riviera in the wake of a second wave of SAS vertigo. "Here," Molly said, shoving his legs into a narrow hatchway overhead. "Grab the rungs. Make like you're climbing backward, right? You're going toward the hull. That's like you're climbing down into gravity. Got it?" Case's stomach churned. "You'll be fine, Mon," Erdal said, his grin bracketed with gold incisors. Somehow, the end of the tunnel had become its bottom. Case embraced the weak gravity like a drowning man finding a pocket of air. "Up," Molly said. "You gonna kiss it next?" Case lay flat on the deck, on his stomach, arms spread. Something struck him on the shoulder. He rolled over and saw a fat bundle of elastic cable. "Gotta play house," she said. "You help me string this up." He looked around the wide, featureless space and noticed steel rings welded on every surface, seemingly at random. When they'd strung the cables, according to some complex scheme of Molly's, they'd hung them with battered sheets of yellow plastic. As they worked, Case gradually became aware of the music that pulsed constantly through the cluster. It was called dub, a sensuous mosaic cooked from vast libraries of digitalized pop. It was worship, Molly said, and a sense of community. Case heaved at one of the yellow sheets. The thing was light, but still awkward. Zion smelled of cooked vegetables, humanity, and ganja. "Good," Armitage said, gliding loose-kneed through the hatch and nodding at the maze of sheets. Riviera followed, less certain in the partial gravity. "Where were you when it needed doing?" Case asked Riviera. The man opened his mouth to speak. A small trout swam out, trailing impossible bubbles. It glided past Case's cheek. "In the head," Riviera said, and smiled. Case laughed. "Good," Riviera said. "You can laugh. I would have tried to help you, but I'm no good with my hands." He held up his palms, which suddenly doubled. 4 arms, 4 hands. "Just the harmless clown, right, Riviera?" Molly stepped between them. "Yo," Erdal said from the hatch. "Ya wan come with me, cowboy man?" "It's your deck," Armitage said, "and the other gear. Help him get it in from the cargo bay." "You very pale man," Erdal said, as they were guiding the foam-bundled Hosaka terminal along the central corridor. "Maybe you want to eat something." Case's mouth flooded with saliva. He shook his head. Armitage announced an 80-hour stay in Zion. Molly and Case would practice in zero gravity, he said, and acclimatize themselves to working in it. He would brief them on Freeside in the Villa Straylight. It was unclear what Riviera was supposed to be doing, but Case didn't feel like asking. A few hours after their arrival, Armitage had sent him into the yellow maze to call Riviera out for a meal. He'd found him curled like a cat on a thin pad of temper foam, naked, apparently asleep, his head orbited by a revolving halo of small white geometric forms, cubes, spheres, and pyramids. "Hey, Riviera." The ring continued to revolve. He'd gone back and told Armitage. "He's stoned," Molly said, looking up from the disassembled parts of her Fletcher. "Leave him be." Armitage seemed to think that zero-G would affect Case's ability to operate in the Matrix. "Don't sweat it," Case argued. "I jack in and I'm not here. It's all the same." "Your adrenaline levels are higher," Armitage said. "You've still got SAS. You won't have time for it to wear off. You're going to learn to work with it." "So I do the run from here?" "No. Practice, Case, now. Up in the corridor." Cyberspace, as the deck presented it, had no particular relationship with the deck's physical whereabouts. When Case jacked in, he opened his eyes to the familiar configuration of the Eastern Seaboard Fission Authority's Aztec Pyramid of Data. "How you doing, Dixie?" "I'm dead, Case. Got enough time in on this Hosaka to figure that one." "How's it feel?" "It doesn't." "Bother you?" "What bothers me is nothing does." "How's that?" "Had me this buddy in the Russian camp, Siberia. His thumb was frostbit. Medics came by and they cut it off. Month later, he's tossing all night. 'Elroy,' I said, 'what's eating you?' 'Goddamn thumb's itching,' he says. So I told him, 'scratch it.' 'McCoy,' he says, 'it's the other goddamn thumb.'" When the construct laughed, it came through as something else, not laughter, but a stab of cold down Case's spine. "Do me a favor, boy." "What's that, Dix?" "This scam of yours, when it's over, you erase this goddamn thing." Case didn't understand the Zionites. Errol, with no particular provocation, related the tale of the baby who had burst from his forehead and scampered into a forest of hydroponic ganja. "Ver small baby man, no long you finger." He rubbed his palm across an unscarred expanse of brown forehead and smiled. "It's the ganja," Molly said when Case told her the story. "They don't make much of a difference between states, you know. Errol tells you it happened. Well, it happened to him. It's not like bullshit, more like poetry. Get it?" Case nodded dubiously. The Zionites always touched you when they were talking, hands on your shoulder. He didn't like that. "Hey, Errol," Case called an hour later, as he prepared for a practice run in the freefall corridor. "Come here, man. Want to show you this thing." He held out the trodes. Errol executed a slow-motion tumble. His bare feet struck the steel wall, and he caught a girder with his free hand. The other held a transparent water bag, bulging with blue-green algae. He blinked mildly and grinned. "Try it," Case said. He took the band, put it on, and Case adjusted the trodes. He closed his eyes. Case hit the power stud. Errol shuddered. Case jacked him back out. "What did you see, man?" "Babylon," Errol said sadly, handing him the trodes and kicking off down the corridor. Riviera sat motionless on his foam pad, his right arm extended straight out, level with his shoulder. A jewel-scaled snake, its eyes like ruby neon, was coiled tightly a few millimeters behind his elbow. Case watched the snake, which was finger-thick and banded black and scarlet, slowly contract, tightening around Riviera's arm. "Come, then," the man said caressingly to the pale, waxy scorpion, poised in the center of his upturned palm. "Come." The scorpion swayed its brownish claws and scurried up his arm, its feet tracking the faint, dark telltales of veins. When it reached the inner elbow, it halted and seemed to vibrate. Riviera made a soft hissing sound. The sting came up, quivered, and sank into the skin above a bulging vein. The coral snake relaxed, and Riviera sighed slowly as the injection hit him. Then the snake and the scorpion were gone, and he held a milky plastic syringe in his left hand. "If God made anything better, he kept it for himself. You know the expression, Case?" "Yeah," Case said. "I heard that about lots of different things. You always make it into a little show?" Riviera loosened and removed the elastic length of surgical tubing from his arm. "Yes, it's more fun." He smiled, his eyes distant now, cheeks flushed. "I've a membrane set in just over the vein, so I never have to worry about the condition of the needle."
"Doesn't hurt?"
The bright eyes met his.
"Of course it does. That's part of it, isn't it?"
"I'd just use derms," Case said.
Pedestrian, Riviera sneered and laughed, putting on a short-sleeved white cotton shirt.
Must be nice, Case said, getting up.
Get high yourself, Case?
I had to give it up.
Freeside, Armitage said, touching the panel on the little brawn hologram projector. The image shivered into focus, nearly 3 meters from tip to tip.
Casinos here.
He reached into the skeletal representation and pointed.
Hotels, Strata title property, big shops along here.
His hand moved.
Blue areas are lakes.
He walked to one end of the model.
Big cigar, narrows at the ends.
We can see that fine, Molly said.
Mountain effect as it narrows. Ground seems to get higher, more rocky, but it's an easy climb. Higher you climb, the lower the gravity. Sports up there. There's Velodrome Ring here, he pointed.
A what? Case leaned forward.
They race bicycles, Molly said. Low grav, high traction tires get up over 100 kilos an hour.
This end doesn't concern us, Armitage said with his usual utter seriousness.
Shit, Molly said. I'm an avid cyclist.
Riviera giggled.
Armitage walked to the opposite end of the projection.
This end does. The interior detail of the hologram ended here, and the final segment of the spindle was empty.
This is the Villa Strelite. Steep climb out of gravity, and every approach is kinked. There's a single entrance here, dead center, zero gravity.
What's inside, boss? Riviera leaned forward, craning his neck. 4 tiny figures glittered near the tip of Armitage's finger. Armitage slapped at them as if they were gnats.
Peter, Armitage said, you're going to be the first to find out. You'll arrange yourself an invitation. Once you're in, you see that Molly gets in.
Case stared at the blankness that represented Straylight, remembering the Finn's story. Smith, Jimmy, the talking head, and the ninja.
Details available? Riviera asked. I need to plan a wardrobe, you see.
Learn the streets, Armitage said, returning to the center of the model.
Desiderata Street here. This is the Rue Jules Verne.
Riviera rolled his eyes. While Armitage recited the names of Freeside Avenues, a dozen bright pustules rose on his nose, cheeks, and chin. Even Molly laughed. Armitage paused, regarded them all with his cold, empty eyes.
Sorry, Riviera said, and the sores flickered and vanished.
Case woke late into the sleeping period and became aware of Molly crouched beside him on the foam. He could feel her tension. He lay there confused. When she moved, the sheer speed of it stunned him. She was up and through the sheet of yellow plastic before he'd had time to realize she'd slashed it open.
Don't you move, friend.
Case rolled over and put his head through the rent in the plastic.
What? Shut up.
You're the one, man, said a Zion voice. Cat Eye call him. Call him Steppin' Razor. I Malcolm, sister. Brothers want converse with you and Cowboy.
What brothers?
Founders, man. Elders of Zion, you know.
We open that hatch, the light'll wake boss man, Case whispered.
Make it special dark now, the man said. Come, I and I visit the founders.
You know how fast I can cut you, friend?
Don't stand talking, sister. Come.
The 2 surviving founders of Zion were old men, old with the accelerated aging that overtakes men who spend too many years outside the embrace of gravity. Their brown legs, brittle with calcium loss, looked fragile in the harsh glare of reflected sunlight. They floated in the center of a painted jungle of rainbow foliage, a lurid communal mural that completely covered the hull of the spherical chamber. The air was thick with resinous smoke.
Step in Razor, one said, as Molly drifted into the chamber. Like unto a whipping stick.
That is a story we have, sister, said the other.
A religion story. We are glad you've come with Malcolm.
How come you don't talk the patois? Molly asked.
I came from Los Angeles, the old man said.
His dreadlocks were like a matted tree with branches the color of steel wool.
Long time ago, up the gravity well and out of Babylon, to lead the tribes home. Now my brother likens you to Steppin' Razor.
Molly extended her right hand, and the blades flashed in the smoky air. The other founder laughed, his head thrown back.
Soon come the final days. Voices, voices crying in a wilderness, prophesying ruin unto Babylon.
Voices, the founder from Los Angeles was staring at Case.
We monitor many frequencies. We listen always. Came a voice out of the babel of tongues, speaking to us. It played us a mighty dub.
Call 'em winter mute, said the other, making it two words. Case felt the skin crawl on his arms.
The mute talked to us, the first founder said. The mute said we are to help you.
When was this? Case asked.
30 hours prior to you docking Zion.
You ever hear this voice before?
No, said the man from Los Angeles. And we are uncertain of its meaning. If these are final days, we must expect false prophets.
Listen, Case said. That's an AI, you know. Artificial intelligence. The music it played you, it probably just tapped your banks and cooked up whatever it thought you'd like to...
Babylon, broke in the other founder. Mother's many demon, I and I know. Multitude horde.
What was that you called me, old man? Molly asked.
Steppin' razor, and you bring a scourge on Babylon, sister, on its darkest heart.
What kind of message the voice have? Case asked.
We were told to help you, the other said, that you might serve as a tool of final days.
His lined face was troubled.
We were told to send Malcolm with you, in his tug, Garvey, to the Babylon port of Freeside, and this we shall do. Malcolm a rude boy, said the other, and a righteous tug pilot.
But we have decided to send Errol as well, in Babylon Rocker, to watch over Garvey. An awkward silence filled the dome. That's it? Case asked. You guys work for Armitage or what?
We rent you space, said the Los Angeles founder. We have a certain involvement here with various traffics and no regard for Babylon's law.
Our law is the word of Jah, but this time it may be we have been mistaken.
Measure twice, cut once, said the other softly.
Come on, Case, Molly said. Let's get back before the man figures out we're gone.
Malcolm will take you. Jah loves sister.
Chapter 9. The tug Marcus Garvey, a steel drum 9 meters long and 2 in diameter, creaked and shuddered as Malcolm punched for a navigational burn. Splayed in his elastic G-web, Case watched the Zionite's muscular back through a haze of scopolamine. He'd taken the drug to blunt SAS nausea, but the stimulant the manufacturer included to counter the scop had no effect on his doctored system. How long's it going to take us to make Freeside, Molly asked from her web beside Malcolm's pilot module.
Don't be long now, Miss Adat.
You guys ever think in hours?
Sister, time it be time, you know what I mean? Dread.
And he shook his locks.
At control, man. And I come a Freeside when I come.
Case, she said, have you maybe done anything toward getting in touch with our pal from Bairn? Like all that time you spent in Zion, plugged in with your lips moving?
Pal, Case said, sure. No, I haven't. But I got a funny story along those lines, left over from Istanbul. He told her about the phones in the Hilton.
Christ, she said, there goes a chance. How come you hung up?
It could have been anybody, he lied. Just a chip. I don't know. He shrugged.
Not just because you were scared, huh? He shrugged again.
Do it now.
What?
Now. Anyway, talk to the flatline about it.
I'm all doped, he protested, but reached for the trodes. His deck and the Hosaka had been mounted behind Malcolm's module, along with a very high-resolution Cray monitor. He adjusted the trodes. Marcus Garvey had been thrown together around an enormous old Russian air scrubber, a rectangular thing daubed with Rastafarian symbols, Lions of Zion and Black Star liners, the reds and greens and yellows overlaying wordy decals in Cyrillic script. Someone had sprayed Malcolm's pilot gear a hot tropical pink, scraping most of the overspray off the screens and readouts with a razor blade. This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette. Please reverse or turn the cassette over now.